On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
One of the things that I enjoy most about the Christmas season, one of the traditions that I have been doing for a number of years now, is reading the book of Isaiah during Advent. And one of the reasons I do that is that Isaiah has so much to say about the coming Messiah. And there's so much about the book of Isaiah that talks about the Messiah that many biblical scholars through the centuries have considered it kind of an unofficial fifth gospel. Well, here today to talk about a new family Advent devotional that's based on Isaiah is Champ Thornton. His book is Wonders of His Love, Finding Jesus in Isaiah. It's illustrated by Jeremy Slagle, and it is from New Growth Press. Champ is an associate pastor at Ogletown Baptist Church in Newark, Delaware, host of In the Word, On the Go, a 10-minute podcast for families, and is the author of several books, including The Radical Book for Kids, Radically Different, A Student's Guide to Community, and Why Do We Say Goodnight? Champ and his wife have three children. Illustrator was raised on Calvin and Hobbes and the Muppet Show. He works in Columbus, Ohio as a graphic designer. And from the illustrations in here, you'll recognize the influence that he's had. Champ, thank you so very much for talking with us today on the Bookshelf.
Doc, it is great to be with you. Thanks for the invitation to be on the Bookshelf with you. I guess beside you on the Bookshelf.
Absolutely. So for people who are in traditions that don't celebrate Advent, let's quickly define for them, what is the Advent season?
Yeah, it's a great question. So the word Advent means arrival, and it is the word that's traditionally been used to refer to the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas as we anticipate the arrival of Christmas Day, but then also more to the heart of it, it's the word that expresses the longing and the waiting that God's people had for centuries as they waited for the arrival of the Messiah. And so when we talk about Advent, we're just talking about, kids wait for gifts and they're looking forward to those, but it's another way of just focusing those same desires and same anticipations, not for gifts, but for the greatest gift, for Jesus Christ, the Messiah.
Right, because the whole idea of giving gifts at Christmas is a reflection of our rejoicing at the great gift, the greatest gift that was given to us, the promised Messiah in the fullness of time came. What does Isaiah have to say about the light shining in the darkness? This is one of my favorite passages because it so describes the way the world was by the first century when Christ came into the world. There had been no word from prophets for hundreds of years. And the world was getting darker and darker. The Roman Empire was in charge, but that didn't mean that everything was sweetness and light. The prophecy from Isaiah 9 really sets us up well for the coming of something, someone that was going to change everything, right?
Yeah, so when we think about Old Testament history, we're thinking about, like the reign of King David would it be considered, around one of the high points of the spiritual maturity of God's people. It stands out like, it's not perfect, but like really amazing. And then maybe even a little step even brighter when we get to the reign of King Solomon, at least the first part of his reign, the construction of the temple. And it just seems like, there's great prosperity and a lot of what God had promised was coming to pass in the reign of Solomon. And then after Solomon started walking away from the Lord, and then, of course, in the reign of his son, and then his grandson, and then et cetera, down the line, it just all starts to go downhill, and go downhill really fast. In fact, for those of you who are into, your listeners who are into numbers and metrics and facts, when you think of, all the kings of Judah and Israel, so we're talking about the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom of Israel after the kingdom divided after Solomon's son, all those kings, dozens of names, only four of them are said to be, good kings, that at least for part of their life, the first part or the last part, that they were walking after the ways of the Lord. That's astounding. I mean, you kind of think of the Old Testament sort of as the Sunday school lesson where we're supposed to, be like this person and be like that person. And, there's people to emulate, but really so much of the Old Testament, especially the last half, is examples to avoid, not to follow. And so there is this darkness not only around God's people as they're surrounded by nations that are not following the Lord, but are living in idolatry, and nations that are taking them captive and enslaving them and exiling them to other lands, but the darkness that was growing inside their hearts. And so when Isaiah prophesies that those who dwelt in darkness have seen a great light, that light not only shone around them, but when the Messiah came, that light shone even down into their hearts. And so that is part of the beauty of Isaiah. As he points to the future, to the Messiah who would come, he points to one of these realities, that the Messiah would be the light of the world.
When you read the first chapter of the Gospel of John, we have this wonderful poetic discussion about the light coming into the world, and that the people weren't really interested because they were content with living in the darkness, but he came to bring light. When we talk about Jesus as the light of the world, it's easy for us to be caught up in that same sort of thinking, I believe, because for most people, at least in the United States and in the Western world, are fairly comfortable most of the time, and we don't realize that we're living in the shadows.
Yeah, it's so true. So this is one of the things that I love about Isaiah is, when you read Isaiah, and Doc, you have already mentioned that you love to read Isaiah, especially around this time of year, that you'll know that Isaiah doesn't just use big $5 theology words, but he uses metaphors, images, word pictures that, man, they're so down to earth. They're right where we live. And, you know, he'll talk about flocks of sheep. He'll talk about fruit. He'll talk about roots and roads and swimmers and shepherds. He'll talk about thrones and axes and storms and sea monsters. I mean, the list could just go on. And these are pictures and realities that we can get our hands around. You know, they have dirt under their fingernails, if I can say it that way. And we really connect with where Isaiah is. So when he talks about light and darkness, I mean, we understand these things, right? So God is communicating through Isaiah in ways that meet us right where we are. And the neat thing, the wonderful, the amazing thing really about the way Isaiah talks is he uses these metaphors, a lot of them, to not just talk about the situation that he was describing around him, but he uses these word pictures to point to the future and describe the one who would come, the Messiah that was prophesied, who would come and set everything right, who would bring light into the darkness. And so we can associate with the way Isaiah communicates. There's so much that's, I mean, it's very complicated. Isaiah is a long book, and it's a lot that's difficult to understand. And we think about, even in the book of Acts, the Ethiopian court official that Philip talks to. He's reading Isaiah, and Philip says, "Do you understand what you're reading?" He's like, "Well, no, you know, how can I unless someone teaches me?" And we all get that because we read the prophets, we read Isaiah, and it's complicated. But the images that he uses, they're not complicated. We can get our hearts around them. And so I wanted to put together an Advent book, a devotional, really, for families, even with young children, that really emphasize the word pictures and metaphors around who Jesus is. And we find Isaiah saying, this is what the Messiah is going to be like when he comes. And we see it connecting like this straight line to the Gospels. When Isaiah says that the people who sat in darkness have seen a great light, that when we go to the Gospels, we read that Jesus is the light of the world, and he came into the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome him. So we can really connect with what Isaiah is saying, even if we don't get, you know, every single word of his enormous prophecy.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Champ Thornton. Dr. Thornton is the author of Wonders of His Love, Finding Jesus in Isaiah. The book is a family Advent devotional that's illustrated by Jeremy Slagle and available from New Growth Press. Each chapter, and we'll get back to what the chapters are talking about in just a moment, but each chapter is lined up so that there is a devotional that is not real long for each day, so that, as Champ has said, you're doing this with your family. And there are activities, including a hymn or a Christmas carol that can be sung for that week. And I really like this, that there is an ornament. So you make a copy in the book, and then you cut it out, or you let the kids color it, and then you cut it out, and you can then put it on the tree and ask questions of the children, like, what's the ornament all about? And there are other things that you have in the activities, scavenger hunt, sugar cookie stars, glow stick ring toss. How did you figure out which things would work? Did you sort of test drive this with your own three kids? Or?
Yeah, you know, we've done some of these things before. Like, of course, you know, sugar cookies are always delicious. And there's one game where you take a big roll of cellophane, you know, plastic wrap, and you You unroll it, and then as you re-roll it into a ball, you intersperse pieces of candy or little tiny toys, things that kids will enjoy. And then the game is unwrapping it within a time limit with socks on your hands. And, of course, you know, every piece of candy and toy you get, you know, is yours to keep. And so that's always a fun one that our family has enjoyed in the past. But, you know, it's great fun to connect the story of Jesus with real life. And so here's what I mean by that. When we think about Jesus, we think about him as our Savior. And that is so right. The Bible presents the fact that, like the angel told Joseph, you're going to name this baby Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. But we also know from other parts of the Bible, like for the book of Hebrews, chapter 1, for example, that and Colossians, that Jesus is also the Creator. And so we need to make sure our children understand that Jesus isn't just sort of the important person on Sundays or when we have Bible time, but he's connected to real life. And he made all the games that they enjoy, he made them. All the songs that they sing, singing is his idea. Music is his idea. And so when we enjoy the things that God has made, we're understanding the world the way he designed it to be made. And so we want to connect these truths that Jesus is Redeemer and Savior, but he's also Creator. And this keeps our understanding of Christianity, our children's understanding of the faith, from being something that's almost like a religious icing on the cake of real life. Now, this is our Father's world. He made all of it. And so it ought to be the most natural thing in the world to enjoy sugar cookies and think about Jesus, to play games and enjoy Jesus. These things all should go together. And I hope the book helps families put together the fact that Jesus is rescuer and that he's Creator.
One of my favorite devotionals in the book is from day one of week two, entitled We Need God's Life. It's based on Isaiah 11:1 and 2a, and develops this interesting relationship between the idea of a new branch, a shoot, bearing fruit from the old root out of the stump of David's family, Jesus coming as a shoot himself, as a tiny baby, and you bring in Christmas trees and just a lot of modern imagery into and relate that into this ancient imagery from Isaiah, which I think is very interesting, and it seems to me like this would be really easy for kids to get a good grasp of the point that you're making here.
Yeah, so Jesus makes the point so plainly in the New Testament. In John 15, Jesus says that he is the true vine, right? So he is the true source of our life, and we need to abide in him and bear fruit as we are connected to him. He's our source of life. And really, in many ways, he's drawing on an image that the Old Testament knows about, and that is when you go to the Old Testament about a dozen times, it talks about a vine. And it's not a fruitful vine. It's an unfruitful vine. It bears sour grapes or none at all. And it's in the Old Testament. It's the nation of Israel, God's people. They were not living the way God intended. But there would come a day when there would be growth. There would be this new plant that would grow out of this the wasted garden of God's people in the Old Testament. And this tiny shoot, this little twig, would grow up and would be fruitful. And that's Jesus. And he says, I am that true vine. And so I did want to connect it with something that I think kids could understand, and that is Christmas trees. So this isn't what Isaiah had in mind, but you know, here's how I think about it. In the last few years, our family has used put up an artificial tree, right? But for years, we put up a live tree, and that was because my wife, her dad had an allergic reaction to a pine tree, so they always had artificial trees.
Right.
So she's like, man, I want to put up a real tree. And so for years, we'd always go out and find a tree and then bring it home and set it up. And you know what you have to do with those trees? You have to water them.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have this life going into the tree, some nutrition, some water, it's going to die and it's going to dry up. And that's because it's not connected to the ground anymore. It's not connected to the root. And so this is the lesson, that if we are not connected to the true source of life, Jesus Christ, then you know what? We're not going to have life in us, and we're going to dry up, and we're not going to be fruitful. Jesus isn't just our rescuer. He is the source of our spiritual life. He's the source of our fruit, the fruit of the Spirit. He is the source of everything we need. And so we need to stay connected to Jesus, and as Christians, we are.
We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Reverend Champ Thornton, who's the author of Wonders of His Love, Finding Jesus in Isaiah from New Growth Press. And the chapter, which is week three, builds on Isaiah 40, verse 11. When we think of the Good Shepherd, we generally think of the 23rd Psalm. We think of Jesus saying that I am the Good Shepherd. But there are lots of references in the Old Testament outside Psalm 23, which include, but is not limited to, Isaiah 40, 11, that talk about God as a Good Shepherd. This is a wonderful imagery for us because we are fragile people and we desperately need someone to shepherd us. We are like sheep, which is not any sort of compliment to human beings, but far too often we are really sheep-like, aren't we?
You know, it's true. And that verse you mentioned in Isaiah, it's so interesting because it doesn't just say that the Lord will lead his people like a shepherd and guide them, but it says he'll carry them in his arms and that he's gentle with the little lambs, the baby lambs, and for those that are pregnant, they're expecting, and they're about to have babies. And, you know, that's just so amazing because I think if we're honest with ourselves, most of us would say, boy, there at least are seasons in our life or maybe just moments in our day when, you know, we don't feel like we have our act together. And maybe that's actually, if we're honest, it's most of the time. And the Lord knows where we are. He knows our number. He knows our limitations. He knows our weaknesses. He knows we can't keep up like the rest of the flock. He knows this about us. And he adjusts to us. Isn't that amazing? That here the shepherd doesn't say, come on, let's go, you know, get with it, toughen up, you know, let's get with the program. He pauses and treats us in a way that fits our weakness. What a gentle and good shepherd he is to us. So I just love that picture. And then, of course, Jesus picks up in the New Testament the fact that he is the good shepherd of the sheep. And even if one is missing out of the whole flock, he goes after that one. It's so individualized. That's his care for us as shepherd.
The imagery for the fourth week is that of Jesus who is with us. The idea of God with us, Emmanuel, is a powerful thing, and Matthew picked up on that, but he didn't invent it. That came from the Old Testament as well.
Yeah, so in Isaiah it says that you know, the virgin will conceive and bear a son, and you will call his name Emmanuel. And you know, that word, the name Emmanuel, literally in Hebrew it means God with us. Right? That's what it means. What's interesting to me and is the way Matthew in the New Testament, Gospel of Matthew, uses and quotes this verse, and it's something along this lines. The angel says to Joseph, you're going to name this baby Jesus because he will save his people from their sins. So if you think, it's really interesting, the name Jesus means Jehovah saves.
Yeah.
Jehovah saves. So they're going to name the baby Jesus because Jehovah will save his people from their sins. And you might say, there might be people who would say, you know, I don't think that Jesus is really God. I mean, there are people out there who think that. They don't think that Jesus is God, right? And what's interesting about this verse is it says, no, you're going to name the baby Jesus because Jehovah will save his people from their sins. And I can hear some people say, see, it doesn't say that Jesus is Jehovah. It says that Jehovah will save his people from their sins. And maybe Jehovah sent the baby as his messenger, as his agent, as the one who he sent out to do the job for him. So Jehovah's going to save, and how is he going to do that? By sending Jesus to do it. So that's what it could mean, except the very next verse in Matthew. It says, and this was to fulfill what was written by the prophet Isaiah when he said, behold, a virgin will conceive and bear a son, and you shall call his name Emmanuel. Because how does Isaiah connect those two thoughts? Is that when Jehovah saves his people, how does he do it? Not by sending someone, but by coming and being with his people.
Right.
Jehovah is the one who came. Jesus is Jehovah. And when Jehovah saves, he does it himself. So I feel like those verses in Matthew just are such an unbelievable evidence and truth that the Bible is saying, no, Jesus is the Son of God. He is God incarnate. And it's such a strong truth there in Matthew, but it's drawing from Isaiah. And we go back to Isaiah, it's not just used that Isaiah doesn't just use the name Emmanuel as some sort of proof for the deity of Jesus Christ, the divinity of Jesus Christ. He also is including there that the fact that the virgin is going to have a son is a great comfort to God's people, and it should be for us as well, that when God comes to be with us, that we shouldn't just say, oh, that means we're right, our doctrine, our theology is right, but it's a comfort to us because he comes and meets us where we are. And we might be right theologically, but we need him with us. We need him to come to be near us. And when he comes and is near us, he calms our fears, he meets us where we are, and he is the help that we desperately need.
That reminds me of the first chapter of John again. John does not have a nativity chapter like Luke and Matthew per se, but the first chapter of John essentially says all that we need to know about the character of Jesus and why he came to be among us. And there's one translation that I heard that said that the Word became flesh and made his tents among us. I love that idea that he dwelling among us, not just somewhere, but he came down to the nitty gritty. He came down as a little baby. He came down as a helpless kid whose mother and stepfather were keeping him safe from the forces of evil that were set up against him, and he dwelled among us. That's just such a powerful thing to be reminded at Christmas, that Jesus didn't just come to be born, as incredible and as important as that is. He came to live among us, and he came to die for us. I think that's one of the reasons that I love this time of year, even though people say, oh, it's so commercialized. Well, maybe, but because of the fact that everybody's saying Christmas and everybody's seeing nativity scenes and so forth, it gives us openings, doesn't it, to talk to people. And you can say, hey, by the way, do you know who that baby in the manger is? And do you understand why that's important for us? And do you understand who he grew up to be? People are more open, I think, at this time of year to us talking to them about such things because it's Christmas, and they know that culturally that's part of it, but it's so much bigger than that.
Yeah, and I think one of the people that we can talk to, one group of people we can talk to about who Jesus is and why he came, is even the youngest among us. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote this book, I had in mind that families could sit down in the living room or a den or whatever together in an evening and take 2 or 3 minutes, because each week of the devotional has 5 readings. So it doesn't have to be a 7-night-a-week thing, and it doesn't have to be 30 minutes at a crack. You know, it can be really the longest reading probably takes just about 2 minutes to read.
Yeah.
So even the very youngest, even if they're not processing everything, the little 2-year-old's not getting it, it's not that long to squirm or to not squirm until they're done. And so families can read this together, and I had in mind that even the youngest, the 4-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, could be able to get at least a bit of what's going on. So we're talking about some pretty amazing things in theology and the Bible, but this book is written in a way that's very accessible even to the youngest who are hearing it read. And it's short, and you know, Advent is such a busy, busy season of the year, the month of December. You've got extra programs at school and rehearsals, extra programs and rehearsals at church. You know, there's shopping, getting ready for trips, there's all sorts of parties. It's really busy. So I wanted this book, and here's the metaphor that I use for the book, not Isaiah, this is me, that this book is kind of like a bowl of marbles where a family could just kind of reach in and pick out what serves them best. So if they only get around to a couple of the readings that week, that's fine, no problem. If they wanted to do more, there's like 5 options for the week for readings, for devotions together. There's some discussion questions for each of the readings that would serve them if they wanted to go a little more, a little deeper. There's also crafts and activities, songs, some bonus sections of interesting trivia related to Christmas, like was Jesus really born in a stable? What's the real true story about Saint Nick? All sorts of things that might be interesting if they wanted to go further. But since it is such a busy time, and since families even with young children need something together, I hope this book serves families well, and that the gospel and the beauty of Jesus and the goodness of Jesus the Messiah is something that will come alive even to the youngest hearts this Christmas.
There are two of the extra readings that are in here that I found particularly interesting. One of them was about the star of the wise men. And yeah. You reference a Bible scholar, Colin Nickel, who wrote a book 6 years ago, The Great Christ Comet. And I love that. Yours is about the third book that I've read this year that references that book. And I had the great privilege of interviewing him 6 years ago when that book came out. And it is really interesting, and it is really scientific-y, you know. It's not for kids to read. It's too complicated. So you did, what you did here was to distill the essence of that and make it simple enough that children could understand what he's saying. And I that's very impressive. And the second one is the Xmas, because there's so many people that get unnecessarily upset about seeing Xmas instead of Christmas, thinking that it's some part of some plot to take Christ at a Christmas, and it really isn't at all. As a matter of fact, this is kind of the idea of using the X like this is pretty old, as you explain in the extra sort of devotional day, explaining what exactly that means. We've got 2 minutes or so. Would you like to address that while we have that time?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's so interesting to me. So if you go back and you are learning the Greek alphabet, and of course the New Testament, Matthew through Revelation, it's written in the language of ancient Greek. And so one of the letters we would call the letter X, right? So in Greek they would call it chi, or if you're in a fraternity or something in a college, you know, it would be chi, right? That's how they pronounce it. But it looks like an X, and that is the first letter of the name Christ, of the Messiah. And so it's an abbreviation. So when you say Xmas, right, what that originally meant is just an abbreviation for Christmas. Yeah. Right? It's the shortened version of Christmas. So now what's so interesting to me is that some people might use Xmas because they really do hate Jesus. They want nothing to do with the true, as they say, reason for the season. Mm-hmm. And so they say, I'm just going to say Xmas. And what they don't know is they're saying the same thing. And if you're in the know, and if you know where Xmas originally came from, the abbreviation, then you kind of like chuckle to yourself, like, yeah, that's they're still putting the name of Christ in Christmas, even though they might be thinking they're taking it out.
Absolutely. Champ, I know that our time is very short and we're about done, but there's so much more to enjoy about your new family Advent devotional, Wonders of His Love, Finding Jesus in Isaiah. People can go to your website. They can get a hold of you on Instagram and Twitter. Let's go ahead and tell people how specifically they can do that.
Yes, so my books are available on Amazon for sure. You can also go to newgrowthpress.com. My website is champthornton.com. It's the last name has an N in the middle, Thornton. But you can just Google my name and the book and you can find it. And also, there's also a friend of mine wrote a song that goes with each week of Advent from Isaiah. It's a scripture song from Isaiah. And so if you go to Spotify or Apple Music, look up Stored in My Heart. Something is stored up, so it's Stored in My Heart. And then your family can actually sing along some of the verses that you're learning about in the Advent devotional. I would just say that I hope that this book is something that when even the youngest in a family would hear about who Jesus is and what he's like, and we hear that from Isaiah in the Gospels, that even the youngest would love and trust Jesus more.
And that is a wonderful way for us to end this time together. Champ, it's been a great pleasure getting a chance to talk to you and reading your book, and I look forward to sharing it with my younger grandchildren now. So I'm excited about that, and I hope that lots of other parents and grandparents will do the same and get a copy of Wonders of His Love, Finding Jesus in Isaiah by Champ Thornton, our guest today, illustrated by Jeremy Slagle. Family Advent Devotional is again available from New Growth Press. Champ, thanks again for being with us, and have a Merry Christmas.
Doc, thanks. You as well. It's been great to be with you today. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show.
Our thanks again to Reverend Dr. Champ Thornton, the author of Wonders of His Love. And once again, his website, champthornton.com. You can also check out storiedinmyheart.com for music that's been written to go along with the book. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and your favorite podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening. God bless and Merry Christmas.